but that's the old me.
And AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or if you are catching us on the podcast version of the show, which you can get anytime you want, anywhere you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, you name it, just search for Let's Go Pensacola. You can listen to this show and past episodes of this show anytime you want. And we'll always bring you up to date with everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me, of course, is my co-host, Jeremy Branch. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
Glad.
We are in the midst of my favorite month of the year, Julio.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, man. Such a big October fan.
Big pumpkin spice latte person?
Yeah. As much as I love pumpkin spice, it's the excuse to watch horror movies that keeps me coming back. Like, I'm a little too old for trick-or-treating, says Victoria, my wife, but I can still enjoy watching a good horror movie.
Okay.
And it got me thinking.
I'm gonna pick a bone with your wife here before you go into that. You're never too old for trick-or-treating.
That's what I've been saying.
You show up in my door in a costume, or even just show up at my door, you're getting candy.
All right, man, I'm holding you to it. Holding you to it. So, look, as I mentioned, I love the excuse to watch horror movies, but I always kind of oscillate between, do I want to go back and watch the comfort horror movies that I know I love, that I grew up on, or do I want to use it as an opportunity to watch a bunch of new horror movies that I haven't seen yet? And it got me wondering if, like, you had a take on that.
That's interesting, because I think I have the ideal of wanting to seek out new ones. And maybe I'll get to, you know, one or two new ones, barring, you know, of course, whatever might end up getting released theatrically in that month, because typically we get one or two horror movies released theatrically in October as well.
Yeah.
So I think that the impulse to seek out something new is there. The good intention of seeking out something new is there. But I do tend to fall back on my favorites.
Well, on that note, what is a Halloween must-watch for you?
Huh. I feel like it kind of, it's weird because it's not like Christmas where, like, I do tend to go back to the exact same Christmas movies every year. Like, every year I got to watch Elf. Every year I got to watch A Christmas Story.
Totally agree.
Halloween, it tends to mix up a little more. Like, I have my favorites, but I don't necessarily watch my favorites every single year. Like,
I know you're a fan of Trick or Treat.
That was one I was going to mention for sure. Love that one
okay. A
lot. The original Halloween is obviously up there. It's been a minute since I've watched any of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. And it's funny because I would consider that to be one of my favorite franchises. But I'm realizing it's been some time since I've spent any time with Freddy Krueger.
Well, there you go.
And so maybe I need to go back to see Freddy this year. I think the Scream movies obviously are perennial for both of us.
Uh-huh.
I'm a big fan of Shaun of the Dead. That's one I want to go back to every so often.
I got one that I'm not sure that you've seen, and it's not a old timeless classic in the same way, but I think it's such a great Halloween watch, and that's Hell House LLC.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that one.
It's a found footage movie, and it's about a group of young adults that travel around the country and set up an annual hunt at different locations. Well, they end up at this, like, New England former hotel called the Abaddon Hotel. They set up a hunt there, and the first night of its opening, this massive tragedy happens, and then it goes back to the beginning when they started setting this thing up, and it's all the found footage of the events leading up to it, and it's so cool.
Okay, so it sounds like a much better film than the one I'm thinking of, Hellfest, which was just
yeah,
terrible.
Yeah, it's better than Hellfest. I know that one though.
Yeah, no, it's funny because we're going to talk about this a little later in the show. We just came back from Halloween Horror Nights, and my wife was saying, "Why haven't they ever made a movie like where there's like a Halloween themed, you know, amusement park type place, and there's a killer there?" I was like, "Well, they have. It's called Hellfest. It's terrible."
Yeah, it has potential. There's one called Haunt that does something real similar. That's pretty good, and our mutual friend Chris Wilkes is a fan of. So that would be one that I recommend checking out. I saw there's a new VHS Halloween coming out this year. And while those movies are really hit or miss, the fact that this one's Halloween has me excited to check it out.
Okay, so tell me about that.
I just feel like the horror genre has these like staple filmmakers that never quite reach the mainstream. Somebody that comes to my mind instantly is like Adam Wingard. But the VHS franchise has historically allowed space for like 5 or 6 different indie filmmakers to get a chance to contribute to this anthology series. And
okay,
I don't
okay.
know who's attached to Halloween yet, but I imagine it's going to be a list of like, you know, filmmakers that we should keep an eye out for.
Didn't Kevin Smith do one of those?
If he did, I don't know.
I know he did some kind of horror anthology where he did a chapter. I'm not sure if it was that one or another one. I haven't seen any of those. I have heard of the series, and it's weird that I've somehow managed to evade it so far. Not intentionally, but, you know, it is a very, you know, at least among horror films, it's pretty well, horror fans, it's a pretty well-known commodity, but I've never...
I would be lying to say that it's like a must-watch, but Radio Silence has a really, really good segment at the end of, I think VHS 2, Radio Silence went on to do some movies that we love, like Ready or Not and Scream 5 and 6. So, you know, there's some gems in there.
Okay, the one I'm thinking of that Kevin Smith was involved with is called Holidays. And it's a bunch of short horror. It's an anthology film of short horror films, each inspired by a different holiday celebration. He does the Halloween one in that one.
I gotta check that out.
Yeah, haven't seen that either. But it, you know, again, similar concept, and you know, a bunch of interesting filmmakers involved in that too.
So, what do you think about Welcome to Derry?
I have not really paid too much attention to it yet. When is it coming out, or has it come out already?
Right. No, it's like October 24th or something like that, towards the end of the month, maybe even the 26th. But they just now dropped the trailer, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I knew that it was coming, and like kind of my real only some knowledge of it is that the Funko Pops have started coming out. Because I collect Funko Pops, and I've been spending entirely too much time and money on whatnot lately, doing auctions for Funko Pops, and I've gotten addicted to like these auctioneers that do these random wheels where you win the auction and they spin the wheel and you get whatever the wheel is. And
oh,
so,
that's cool.
So yeah, it's fun, and sometimes you get some really cool stuff, and then sometimes you get, you know, I have I think 4 or 5 boxes of anime Funko Pops in my house now, and I don't watch anime. So so at some point I'm going to be selling off some anime Funko Pops. If you're an anime fan and you want to buy some Funko Pops, I might be your man.
There you go.
But yeah, so I've seen the Welcome to Derry Pop starting to show up on some of those auctions. And if you don't know what Whatnot is, just think if eBay and TikTok had a baby.
Yeah. My wife, Victoria, actually had a Whatnot group that she hosted at the hotel like 2 weeks ago. And I wish I would have went to meet the people.
It's an interesting concept. You know, I find myself like vegging out in front of those shows more often than I'd like to admit.
And, well, you're admitting it now.
And spending more money on them than I'd like to admit. But there's something kind of hypnotic about, even if you're not bidding, just especially anything that's like a surprise-oriented thing like that, just kind of watching that go by. But yeah, I've probably bought entirely too many Funko Pops in the last month just spending time on Whatnot that I didn't need to be spending. But, you know, we all got to have our vices, right?
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Could be worse.
Yeah. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got our co-host, Jeremy Branch, on the line with us. And Jeremy, it's been a couple of weeks since the ending of, I think it's an, at this point we can officially say season one of Alien Earth, because I believe they've announced a second season now. Am I right about that? Do you know for sure?
I can't confirm. I didn't know, but I would. They've got to, right?
I mean, the ending of it certainly suggests that there is more to come with this this vision of the Alien franchise from Noah Hawley. I'm just trying to Google here real quick and see if there's been any specific news about season two.
I don't see any confirmation.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff. You know, they're saying it's number one series on FX, number one series on, it's streaming on Hulu. And I guess this is another thing maybe you can explain to me real quick here, Jeremy. I know they've kind of started integrating Hulu with Disney Plus, but do you still have to have like a package deal to get Hulu in your Disney Plus? I tend to still go to Hulu for the stuff that's Hulu stuff.
So you know that I would not be the person to talk to for some undisclosed reasons, but I get Hulu through Disney Plus.
Okay. Fair enough. I weirdly, even though I know I have the bundle, like I pay for the bundle. I've got the Disney Plus, the Hulu, and I've got, for some insane reason, the ESPN. Actually, the insane reason is that my wife likes hockey. That's, you know, it's not that insane, but there's a reason for it. But weirdly, like if I'm going to watch something that I know is a Hulu property, like if I'm going to watch Only Murders in the Building or anything from FX or, you know, anything like that, I boot up the Hulu app. I don't boot up the Disney app.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it's just that's, you know, training from, you know, years of them being separate stuff. But it still seems weird to me. Like, and I know like internationally, it's been the thing from the start. Cause like internationally, when Disney Plus rolled out internationally, they had a segment called Star that was all of the more mature stuff.
That's right.
And I think they've started phasing that out into just keeping the Disney brand on everything or putting the Hulu brand on it or whatever. But so it's that same kind of thing. Hulu was not part of Disney Plus initially, so it feels like a separate thing to me. So I still just boot up
Hulu.
Treat
it as if it is.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess you could watch it either place. I guess it doesn't really matter, but it just feels like if I'm looking for that, I'm not looking to the Disney app.
That makes sense.
If I'm looking for animated stuff and Star Wars and Marvel, I'm looking for, you know, for the Disney app. Otherwise, you know, if I'm looking for, you know, prestige television stuff or, you know, more adult movie type stuff. And I don't mean adult movies like, you
know, we know what you meant.
Yeah. You know, anyway, that's a different service, but anyway, so we've had this series Alien Earth. Spinoff of the Alien movie franchise that falls. Remind me where this falls on the timeline, Jeremy. You're going to know this off the top of my head.
2 years before the events of Alien.
Of Alien or Aliens?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's 2 years before the events of Alien, but it might be 2 years before the events of Aliens.
Okay. So we have this in the course of this series, and we've talked about this series a little bit before, so I'm going to provide a little bit of a brief recap because it's been a while since we've talked about it. So in case you haven't watched it, and if you haven't seen this show yet, the entire season is available now on Disney Plus and Hulu. Go check it out. It is a really great series, which is why we're talking about it. We don't usually bother to talk about stuff that we don't care that much about.
No.
This ship that is owned by Weyland-Yutani, which is of course this one of the big five overarching corporations own everything in this future universe. Although Weyland-Yutani is the one that we've always kind of focused on. the ship that Weyland-Yutani has had out collecting specimens for biological research.
The Maginot.
The Maginot. Crashes to Earth. It crashes to Earth. Earth is divided up into five corporate states, basically. Mm-hmm. And there are these five corporations that each own part of the globe, basically. And it has crashed down into a rival section of the globe. That is
right.
the Prodigy Corporation, not to be confused with the long defunct online service. Although maybe there's something there. Didn't think about that.
Or the 90s industrial dance act.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think that the head of the trillionaire head of this organization, Boy Cavalier is the character's name. He's a bit of a fire starter, twisted fire starter.
He is. And the way that they prop up contemporary pop culture, he might actually be a really big fan of the band Prodigy.
That would have actually been so one of the things, we played that Pearl Jam song Animal because it is at the end of every episode, there has been a rock song that said something about the series. And they've used a couple of other needle drops throughout the series as well. But that's been like kind of a trademark, is every episode has ended on a rock song that said something about what happened in that episode. And that's the song that plays at the end of the last episode, is Animal by Pearl Jam. But, you know, they could have, the Prodigy's Firestarter would have been a great song to use somewhere in there.
Yeah.
That would have really worked. And I recognize it's not strictly rock, but it has that same rock energy to it. And it would really fit within this world. And it really does. It's not something I thought about before. But given the name of the company, maybe Noah Hawley just felt like that was too on the nose.
Too on the nose, yeah.
I don't know. But I think that really would have worked. And I think it does really work for this character, Boy Cavalier, who is this young genius trillionaire who's built this company. And, you know, there's obviously some political commentary going on here, but there's some political commentary going on in the entire Aliens franchise, if you know what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nothing new. It is, at some point, there is a thread of corporate greed running through the entire franchise. And that's absolutely a factor that's here. But this guy is, I mean, would you say he's an Elon?
Yeah, he definitely has Zuckerberg attributes, but I think Elon and Mark Zuckerberg would both be great analogs.
Yeah, so he has his big innovation that he's brought to this world is he has taken these terminally ill children and he's taken their consciousness and put them into synthetic bodies. And these synthetic bodies are, you know, in every way more powerful than regular human bodies, both in terms of the physicality and in terms of the brain power. And so you have these kids that he's named the Lost Boys. He's obsessed with Peter Pan, and he's renamed each of the kids in the names of one of the Lost Boys, except for the first girl that he did this to, who was our POV character in this, played by the amazing Sydney Chandler. Who's just a great young actress. If you haven't seen her in anything yet, I would also recommend checking out the FX series Pistol, which was the story of the Sex Pistols told from the perspective of the guitarist Steve Jones. She's in that show playing Chrissy Hind of the Pretenders. Runs away with the entire show. She's fantastic in it, and she's fantastic in this. So her character has been renamed Wendy. Again, obvious allusion here. And it's about the corporate exploitation of all of these things, the internecine corporate wars that are going on between these, but it's also a science fiction action show with these huge concepts and these great set pieces and building on this world that we already know so well from, what do we have, six Alien movies plus the two Alien versus Predator? Am I right about that? Does that sound right to you? Or is there, there's eight.
Yeah.
Because of the two Prometheus movies as well.
Yeah.
So this is a world we know pretty well. Yeah. You know, that has been built. There's been a lot of world building in this world up to this point. And I think that interestingly, this series has done more world building than maybe all those eight movies combined.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
It has so expanded the canvas that we've seen that it is not just this falling back on there's xenomorphs and there's facehuggers and there's chest bursters and they're all going to do their thing and everybody's going to say, oh, look, they did the thing. And you get, don't get me wrong, you get the things in the show.
Yeah.
You do get them.
Episode 5 is very much the thing.
Episode 5, but there's also some in some of the later episodes too. You get to see all the classics, but it's not done in a way that, oh, look, we're doing the thing. It's done.
Let me ask you this. Does this expansion of the world come at the cost of the titular alien?
I don't think so. Because first of all, I think that we've seen so much of the titular alien at that point that it has lost some of its menace. And I think that this, with the additions that it makes to the lore, adds to it. I think that we come to realize that these creatures are more intelligent than we maybe gave them credit for.
Uh-huh.
And that the big spoiler here that we'll put up here is that they can be communicated with.
Yeah.
And they can be, for lack of a better term, tamed, which is what Weyland-Yutani's wanted to do from the start.
Yeah,
and has never been able to do.
Very big questions.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I think that there's so many fascinating questions that are introduced by this series that I think that it does introduce new threats too, and I'm excited about those. And not all of the threats are alien. And I think that's interesting too. We're going to take a break, but we're going to talk about this more when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line, and we are talking about Alien Earth, which I just wrapped up a couple weeks ago on FX and Hulu and Disney Plus and probably on a transistor radio or, you know, 20 other services, apparently. I don't know. I can't keep track of it anymore. But great show. And again, we talked about earlier about how at the end of every episode, there's a song that plays that kind of speaks the episode. And man, that song, Cherub Rock, was used at the end of the fifth episode, The Smashing Pumpkins there. And really, again, also says a lot about this world. You know, that who wants honey as long as there's some money? Again, we're talking about the corporate greed that runs this world that maybe is commentary on our modern day world. Maybe just a little bit.
Yeah. You don't have to stretch too far to imagine a world where five corporations run everything. And in fact, one of them is airing Alien Earth, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know, man. That's an interesting question mark, because it is something that I think we've talked about before, is the willingness of some of these corporations to air things that are critical of those corporations.
Yeah.
And I do kind of respect it when they do that, you know, whether they're self-aware enough and not to realize they're doing that, maybe another story. But, you know, Disney has certainly done it before. We've talked about the Tim Burton remake of Dumbo. Definitely
Great example. Was
in some ways that. And then, you know, if you traipse over to Amazon, absolutely The Boys is absolutely a commentary on corporate ownership of everything.
Hilariously seems to be satirizing Disney while still being Amazon.
Yeah, but I don't know that I think Disney is one of those five corporations.
No. So they do have a lot of influence because they're front-facing. But to your point, they are not in that, like, pantheon of the great corporations, you know?
I mean, I think frankly, it's right now, it's Google, Meta, Amazon, Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not sure what I'd say the fifth one is, but it's probably some kind of military-industrial complex thing that they don't want us to know is... At the risk of sounding like I'm putting out some kind of conspiracy theory here.
Let it be that.
Yeah, you know, it's... And I think that there are certainly parallels there. You know, we talked about how... And I guess I didn't mention, you know... Is there an overarching name to what Elon Musk, his conglomeration of companies is?
I'm not sure anymore.
Is it X? I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, because I know there's SpaceX, Tesla. I'm surprised he hasn't renamed it Tesla X.
Yeah. Teslax.
Teslax. Ooh. but yeah, I mean, you gotta throw him in there.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the fifth one, and maybe, you know, even the defense contractors are below that level at this point. Who knows? But at the risk of, we're trying not to dive too much into the real world and the politics of all that, but unfortunately, when you're discussing a series like this that has things to say about what's happening in the real world through a sci-fi lens, which is something that the best science fiction has done throughout history.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the original Star Trek, the original Twilight Zone, you know, and well before that into the literary side, you know, the best science fiction has always said something about the current world through the lens of the fantastic.
And as much as I love a lot of that stuff, I'm also a big fan of the philosophy that, you know, things like Alien and Blade Runner have always explored. And I asked you before the break if you felt that the show's title Alien suffered by a focus on more alien species and more of the world building involving Earth. Do you feel that Noah Hawley was more interested in creating something akin to Westworld or Blade Runner than he was something akin to the Alien series?
I think that he was interested in playing with that world and the trappings of it and elevating it. And I think that Blade Runner is a great comparison, especially because we're talking about two things that Ridley Scott was intimately involved with.
And things that have rumored to cross over for a long time, and more lately it's been more explicit.
Yeah, there's never been a definitive that this is the same world. And I kind of like it that way. I have no problem with them making little asides. But we've already definitively connected the Alien and Predator worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need it to become, as much as I love things like Marvel and DC, I don't need it to become that.
Do you think that the way it handles these kind of more existential questions is better or worse than something that we've seen in Blade Runner?
I think it's on par with what we saw in the original Blade Runner. And again, that depends heavily on which cut of Blade Runner you're talking about.
Yeah.
To be fair, but when Ridley Scott's original vision of Blade Runner is at its most pure, I think this is on a pretty equal footing with it. And I think that this may be sacrilege to say, but this might be every bit as good as the first two Alien films.
Hmm.
And I'm
curious about your general overall thoughts on it. So talk to me about that.
I think that it is certainly more thought provoking. Than anything that's come before in the franchise. There has always been a through line of commentary specifically about corporate greed in there, but that's been kind of where it started and ended with everything we've seen so far. This goes so far beyond that. It's going into the concept of what makes a human a human. It's going into the concept of who is the actual alien here. It's going into the concept of how species evolve and communicate with each other and interact with each other. That's not something we've seen in this universe before. It's not something we've seen a lot of places before. And there's, again, this introduction of these other alien creatures that are not, at least we don't think, from the same source as the xenomorphs.
Mm-hmm.
And that species, however, the evolution that species goes through with the facehuggers and the jetspersers, et cetera. The breakout, interestingly enough, I think the breakout success character from this series, at least from what you see in online buzz, is this
Eileen.
Are they calling it Eileen?
I love it. Don't you? Like, that's a good name.
That's kind of fun. But yeah, this eye creature that burrows into the heads. It's kind of, I guess, a parasitic creature, and burrows into the ocular cavity of its victim and takes over its body.
Yeah.
That's like, and there's something going on. There's an intelligence behind that character that's very mysterious. And we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on there, but that character is manipulating things.
There was a moment in the early season involved with the Ocellus and the tick creatures. And I read it to mean one thing. I thought that the Ocellus was warning the human character, but then in the podcast, Noah Hawley explicitly said that it was basically run into distraction to allow the other creature to escape. But that just allows us to question, what are this thing's motives? What's its relationship with the xenomorph? Because there seems to be something adversarial going on there. And I love all of that stuff. I think you touched on several things that I think are valid. One of those being that this is the most thought-provoking, and I think television is just such a great medium to be able to explore bigger picture ideas. What I don't think it does as effectively is create a xenomorph that's as terrifying, despite the fact that these are very vicious and kill a lot of people. But you also mentioned something that I think is key to all of this, and that's that the alien has been so culturally exposed at this point that I don't know that that was possible.
Yeah, the xenomorph is never going to be as terrifying as it was in 1979.
No.
It's just not. The ship has sailed. We all know what it is now. And I like the fact that they're not trying to make you feel that. Like, it's there. You know it's a danger. And you want to see it, you know, be dangerous, and it is dangerous. But the fact that it is being used for intelligent, thought-provoking science fiction, I'm here for that more than I am for just trying to make it scary again.
Yeah, it's tough for me because I'm such of two minds of that. It's one of my favorite movie monsters, and it was kind of reduced to a guard dog late in the season, and I have conflicting feelings about that.
But isn't that kind of more chilling? Isn't that kind of more chilling that we now have these five super beings who can control the aliens and who end the series with, and spoilers here, we go out and rule?
Yeah, I can see the implications of that. And I do think that it's a really interesting direction to take it. So, like, I see that side of it as well. It opens up a lot of questions, and I'm definitely interested to see them answered, though I always find that the answers are not near as compelling as the question.
We've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. And AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch, our co-host, on the line. Jeremy, would you have recognized that as the original theme from Friday the 13th, do you think?
100%.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, it's weird. It sounds kind of dated to me now.
Sounds a lot like Psycho.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Clearly, that's what they were mm-hmm. going for there, is, you know, kind of that Bernard Herrmann kind of sound to it. I'm playing that because I mentioned earlier in the show we were going to be talking about this year's offerings at Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Florida. Jeremy and I are both big fans of Halloween Horror Nights in general, but I've actually been this year. Jeremy, are you planning to go this year, or are you not going to be able to do it this year?
Not going to be able to make it this year. We went last year and had a blast, and I'm stoked you got to go this year because of a couple of the haunts.
And I didn't get to go last year, so I guess maybe we're alternating years or something. We should try to go together at some point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, we did. We went down last weekend and I sprung the extra money for the Fast Pass, which is not cheap, but I feel like it was kind of worth it because we actually were able to do all 10 haunted houses this year.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it is a challenge. If you have been, you may know that it is a challenge to try to do them all in one night, especially if you don't have that Fast Pass, because sometimes the lines can be an hour, 90 minutes for some of the more popular haunted houses. And
yeah.
We found as the night went on, as we got later into the evening and the park was getting more and more full, even with the Fast Pass, sometimes it was 30 minutes to get through a line and through a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, do the math. It's open from 6-ish to 2 a.m. Doesn't leave you a lot of time. You know, there's some,
no.
And there's other stuff. If you haven't been before, they keep a few of the rides at the park open too. We did have time to go ride the Mummy, which is a very appropriate ride to have open at Halloween Horror Nights. Super fun roller coaster. Harry Potter Escape from Gringotts is open. The Men in Black Alien Attack ride is open. The Transformers, the ride is open. A few of the rides are open. There's all kinds of scare zones where you walk through, and there are different themes. When you walk through the New York set, they have a very like 1920s gangster zombies thing going on. The iconic Mel's Drive-In, every year they change it to Mel's Die-In.
Uh-huh.
And the zombie waitresses, zombie 50s waitresses on roller skates, and you know, fun with that. And then they have, you know, the demons with chainsaws running around towards the front of the park. And they have they had one little scare zone that was really cool, cool this year, that was about a crazy cat lady that was turning kids into cats.
Oh, that's fun.
And that was really interesting. But yeah, we had five haunted houses this year that were based on existing intellectual properties and five original ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always kind of hard to me to compare the originals to the IPs, especially the IPs. I think a lot of them can depend on how well you know that IP and how much you like or don't like that IP.
Sure.
And I'll get those out of the way first, because I think those are the ones that attract the most attention. They're kind of what draw people. And it's like the headliners on a concert, on a festival bill.
Sure. You know,
they're the ones that sell the tickets. So the ticket sellers this year, we had Terrifier, which has become this iconic independent horror property over the past few years that is just getting bigger and bigger every day. And if you are a Terrifier fan, just want to throw a quick shout out. You can have the chance to meet David Howard Thornton, who is Art the Clown, the icon of the Terrifier franchise, as well as Samantha Schiaffi, who plays Victoria in the Terrifier movies. They're both going to be at Pensacon here in Pensacola.
Awesome.
February 20th through 22nd. So you can come out, get your Art the Clown Funko Pop signed, or whatever other items you have signed, get a picture with them. I believe David Howard Thornton is going to be doing in-character photo ops in full costume as well. So if that's something you're into, go get your tickets right now, pensacon.com. Don't wait for them to run out. There's very few VIP tickets left. We'll just throw that out there. Yes, I do work for Pensacon, if you didn't know. So we had Terrifier. We had Five Nights. I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to kind of go through the list real quick.
Okay.
The other IP ones were Five Nights at Freddy's, Fallout, which if you listen to the show, you know is a favorite franchise of Jeremy and I. Jason Universe. So again, the Friday the 13th music is why we played that.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, WWE, The Horror of the Wyatt Six.
Okay.
Wyatt Six is S-I-C-K-S, if you don't know. So mm-hmm. for me, like all of the IP ones were good. There and all the haunted houses overall were good. Like for my ranking for the IP ones, my lowest one's going to be Five Nights at Freddy's. And that's sure. Not to say it wasn't very well done. The animatronics looked great. They looked straight out of the movie. The set, the design, everything was great. If you've seen the Five Nights at Freddy's movie, and I have, you know that it is a bit more tame than a lot of other horror properties. It was a PG-13. Mm-hmm. This is a property that has a lot of kid appeal. The Haunted House, similarly, is a bit more tame.
Sure.
But that's not to say that it wasn't effective or that it wasn't good. It's just if something's got to be the bottom. So out of the five, that's the bottom for me.
Okay.
Really enjoyed, to my surprise, the Wyatt Six. I'm not a wrestling guy. You are, Jeremy. So maybe you know more about them than I do, but I didn't know anything about this property going in, and it made me interested in these characters. I'm kind of interested in finding out more about this little sub world within the WWE world.
Start with Bray Wyatt, because it kind of all built off of him. And so, yeah, it's a real interesting and pretty sad story.
Yeah. And really interesting thing where it was set up to where you walk in through like this big WWE ring and then you go backstage and that's where everything's gone to hell backstage.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So really fun, good storyline, great costumes, great jump scares, a lot of fun. I was dismayed when I got to the Jason Universe house and found that it was in the Fast and the Furious building. Because the last time I had gone to Halloween Horror Nights 2 years ago, the Chucky Universe haunted house was in that building. And it was the least impressive haunted house of all the ones I got to do that year.
I hate that
building, I don't think always lends itself very well to haunted houses.
Okay.
But the Jason Universe one really worked.
Oh, man, nice.
They did a really great job. They had great actors, not just with Jason Voorhees popping out at you, but the thing that really impressed me is that it really did encompass most of, not all of the Jason Universe. There's no, like, I didn't spot any Jason Takes Manhattan or Jason X references in there, but the overall world, yeah, Pamela Voorhees is running around in there. And they had an actress that looked just like Pamela Voorhees from the original movie. And you had, you know, all these victims and all these iconic kills from the Friday the 13th franchise, just absolutely perfectly executed.
That's fun.
Fallout was maybe the one I was most looking forward to as being a big Fallout fan. Again, impeccable casting. You had actors that looked like the actors from the show, playing the ghoul, playing Lucy, playing Maximus, and even playing some of the minor characters like, I've forgotten the name of Lucy's best friend in the vault, the blonde who was pregnant and got the fork in the eye. You get that scene. You get that invasion of the vault with all those guys raiding the vault. You get out onto the post-apocalyptic scape with the ghoul fighting against the Sons of, what are they called? The Sons of Liberty? Is that what they're called?
I don't know. Sounds great.
Yeah, but you get all of that action stuff. Fallout is a property that maybe isn't quite as horror-oriented as some of the others, and maybe that takes a point or two away from it, but really well-designed. And then Terrifier, my first exposure to the Terrifier property. I have not seen any of the movies yet. Very, you know, superficially familiar with Art the Clown, his over-the-top gore.
Uh-huh.
Really well-themed. They did not shy away from leaning into the over-the-top gore. But the engineering in this haunted house was just really, really impressive.
Nice.
Just the way they use the air bursts and the jump scares and water splashing out at you. And, instead of curtains, there's like entrails hanging down for you to go through. It was really fun. And it did make me more intrigued about the Terrifier property. So, hats off to that. Really enjoyed that. But the originals, I think, this year were the best. The two best houses of all were original haunted houses this year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. My two favorites, El Artista, A Spanish Haunting, where it's a storyline about a Spanish artist in kind of like the 18th, 19th century being haunted by his paintings come to life. The really good use of smells in this one, where it had that kind of earthy kind of vibe. It's a great facade of the Spanish mansion, and the centerpiece is in the middle of this haunted house. There's a gargoyle flying over your head, live actor, like in a harness, like swooping over you.
That's awesome.
Really cool. Really, really cool. And then Galkin, Horrors of the North, I think is the name of the title, if I'm remembering correctly. Nordic horror, very, very folk horror oriented. Really great creatures in this one. Really great makeup pieces. And again, very, very scary. The other three, a little lesser for me, The Dolls Let's Play Dead had some really fun use of scale in it, and that you were supposed to be shrunk down to the size of a doll. And that was really fun, and some really fun creatures in that as well. Wasn't as pressed with the Graves of Flesh and the Demon Bounty Hunters, but they were fun as well. No bad side here. Go check it out. Worth your time. You got a couple more weeks to go down there and check it out, and I definitely recommend that you do. We're out of town for this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.